In this episode, we talk about following your purpose and creating your life deliberately. Inspiration guaranteed. Let's get started.
You're listening to the Think Outside the Lines podcast. Practical solutions and ideas for designing the life you want with an added dose of inspiration. Here's your host, Sean Feeney.
What's up, everybody, and welcome to the Think Outside the Lines podcast. My mission with this show is simple. I want to help you improve your life. In each episode, I talk to people who are designing the lives of their dreams. I believe that if they can do it, so can you. And these conversations are meant to inspire you to take action and to pursue the life you've always wanted to live. I'm Sean, and you can find me over at thinkoutsidethelines.com, where we explore these ideas further. Now, my guest today is a spiritual teacher and natural-born clairvoyant. She gives others the knowledge and tools to empower their lives by understanding universal law and spiritual principles and teaching them how to use these principles to deliberately create their lives in a powerful, consistent way that is full of love, joy, compassion, and abundance in all things. Her mission is to bring courage, empowerment, and inspiration to others so that they can take the leap and follow their true purpose. I'm sure you will find her story insightful. It's time to think outside the lines with Bernadette Dickinson. Welcome to the show, Bernadette Dickinson. How are you today?
I'm great. Thanks for having me, Sean.
What's your greatest desire in life at the moment?
At the moment, it is just to embrace change.
Ooh, that's really good. I wish more people had that mindset.
Right. Well, I'm in the process of literally selling 95 and giving away 95% of everything I have collected over the last 20 years so that I can make a move.
Oh, wow. And you just want to like start fresh?
Well, I'm moving from mainland to Hawaii, so there's no point in taking it with me.
Oh, my God. That's amazing. Where in Hawaii are you going to?
Kauai.
Oh, my favorite island. That's amazing. I always wondered how people move to Hawaii because I feel like, to your point, like you obviously have to sell off a lot of your stuff because it's not like the traditional, you know, moving scenario, I feel like.
And it's a little scary. I mean, this has been calling me for the last couple of years, but I got sick last year. So everything went on hold and I thought, well, I'll just leave it be. And then this year started to get the call again back in November, December. And then I just got back actually on the 9th from a trip over there to check it out and make sure I could do this. And now I'm home and packing and clearing and yep.
Awesome. I love it. What is your favorite place you've ever traveled to?
I would say probably has to be Hawaii. Hawaii has such an amazing energy to it.
It really does. It's actually one of those places that like there, I have a list of all these places in the world I want to travel to. And Hawaii is somewhere that I just keep going back to because it's so amazing.
Right? I don't know if you can beat it. I mean, there's other places in the world that I certainly want to go and do things, but I don't know. There's something magical. And my family's from Hawaii, so there's always been a pull.
Oh, nice, nice. What's the worst job you've ever had?
Oh, God. I think, has everyone had like a telemarketing job? I think it lasted like not even the whole day. When I was really young, I did this telemarketing job and literally I think I lasted 2 hours and went home in tears.
That's amazing. I think I had someone recently say telemarketing. My horror story is I never did telemarketing, but I worked at Starbucks for one day. And that for me was like, I couldn't hack it. I have mass respect for people that can deal with those angry coffee customers.
Oh, how funny. Yeah, I can do retail. I can do in service. I've done all of that. But telemarketing was the worst.
It's pretty brutal. Because people just want to probably hang up on you, right?
Pretty much. It's unsolicited. I mean, this was back in the late 80s, too. Yeah. So totally different, but still just you.
Tell me about someone you admire.
You know, one of the people I think that I admire a lot is Sonia Choquette because she really came out onto the scene as a psychic. Okay. When it was still questionable, but yeah. She came out as a real person, not like some mystic weirdo.
Yeah, yeah.
So I really look up to her because I think she's taken a lot of her life and has helped a lot of people.
Awesome. I love that. What would be the title of your autobiography?
I'm actually writing it right now.
Are you really?
Mm-hmm.
My goodness.
Uh-huh. It's more memoirs than necessarily like autobiography, but Journey with Spirit.
Oh, that's good. You can recommend one book that will change someone's life. What is it?
My favorite book series is The Seth Material by Jane Roberts. Really old.
Yeah, it's actually interesting because that's what the Abraham Hicks stuff is based off of, right?
I think that's where she started.
Yeah.
Before she began channeling. But yeah, that stuff hit my life when I was in my like early 20s. And boy, it had a huge impact on me.
Wow. I'm curious to talk about more of that in a little bit. So I'm actually really fascinated by your story. I just reading about your bio and everything, it seems like you've had quite the experience in a short time span in your life. So I'd love it if you could start off by giving us a bit about your background and maybe kind of what you believe the message to be that you were brought here to share with the world.
Well, I have such a, God, my life story is so, even though I'm 49, like I've lived this incredibly fast-paced existence from the time I was born on. I mean, I did not come up in a good environment. I mean, my mom was really kind of messed up when I was born. My dad was in Vietnam. And the last thing I think anyone expected was for me to be born. And I was rejected. So I had to overcome that too, right? I was born 7 days before Christmas. And the story I was told was the little nurses at the hospital gave my mom me in a big stocking, which I still have to this day.
Oh,
and she
gosh.
Just said, that's not a gift. I don't want to take her back. So from day one, I had to overcome this abandonment and rejection thing from my mother. But it was interesting because as much as that was the hardest point in my life and affected everything I ever did, what I learned from all of that is whatever she would do, do the opposite and you'll be just fine.
Right.
And I literally, that is how, I mean, she was an amazing role model for me in that way. I love my mom, but it's that thing of, you know, we all have hard things coming in sometimes and I didn't let it stop me. I just let it guide me and become the signpost of just do the opposite. Because she was very fearful and I am so not that.
Really?
Mm-mm.
I'm fascinated to hear more about how you overcame that.
Lots of study. I mean, I've had, you know, I was born natural clairvoyant and my grandmother on my father's side. So my dad's mom was a psychic in Hawaii and a healer back in the day. And then she died right after I was born, like within 6 months. And I never knew her in physical life, but she has been a guide to me my whole life. And she's from Kauai, funny enough.
Interesting.
And she's really shaped a lot of stuff. I didn't know that she was, you know, who she was until my dad came to live with me 12 years ago. Like, it would have been really helpful had someone me, like, you know, this is what's happening and this is why it's happening. But we didn't talk about it because I came from a very strict Catholic background, went to Catholic school, and I never understood any of it. Like, ever, you know, why are these people so mean and why are they saying God's judgmental and blah, blah, blah.
Totally.
Yeah.
So you say you're born natural clairvoyant. Can you explain to us what that means?
That means that I can see things out of the normal range of sight. So I can see things in other, what people would refer to as dimensions, right? Like what you see with your third dimensional eyes, I can see beyond that.
And how did you discover that?
Well, you know, when I was young, I thought it was just normal. I thought everybody could see it. And I thought everyone knew what was going to happen. But then I got in big trouble when I was about 4 or 5 years old, to the point where my mom was terrified of what I knew and how I knew it and how things would always happen around me. And then she brought the Catholic priest in to do an exorcism one night.
What? Are you serious?
I'm not kidding.
Oh my gosh.
Ah, welcome to my world.
That's so scary.
As a five-year-old, it kind of was. I remember sitting there, me and my sister watching cartoons. I think we were watching Bugs Bunny and he's just sitting there doing this ritual. And, you know, because I could see guides and angels and that was just normal to me. They were trying to just keep me calm and give me signals of how to deal with it and to not make the priest angry. and make him think that whatever he had done had worked, so he'd leave me alone. And it worked. I mean, I was able to bypass it. And at that time, at 5 years old, I learned, like, not everybody can see what I see.
So when you say you can see other things, is that, like, you were just pointing out things that were, was it, like, people that had passed away? Like, what exactly were you pointing out that had people so freaked out?
Well, because I could see, like, guides and angels and people who've passed away, and they would tell me things that were related to their lives that the people in the room would know, my family. And it freaked, literally, like, especially my mom, because she had been to psychics prior, sure, you know. So she kind of knew, but it just, we don't do that. we don't talk about that.
Yeah, and I've always wanted to see a psychic, to be honest with you. I think I've always had that apprehension that, like, I don't want to know the bad things, which is, I think, what prevents a lot of people from wanting to go that might believe in that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. Do you have, like, when you connect with people, do you share everything, or do you share just kind of what they want to hear? How does that work?
I don't share everything. Okay. Literally, I mean, I've been very well trained in how to handle readings, and I'm very different, I think, than some people. My guides and spirit, when I'm getting messages, and it's a rapid download, I don't even catch all of it. If it's not something that they need to know or they're not open to, I'll get a stop sign, literally get a stop sign in my head.
Wow.
And I know, don't go there with them. And to me, it's a matter of planting seeds. You know, I don't want to tell people what to do, but to have information when someone asks a question about if I do this, what will happen?
Yeah.
You know, it gives them guidance, and it's supposed to empower them. It isn't about reading your fortune. You know, there's a whole misconception about what psychics can do. What we can see is possibilities and potentialities based on what's happening in somebody's life.
Wow. So do you believe that we've all been here before?
I do.
You do. How does that tie into things? If you're getting, like, that's what I've always been curious about. So, for example, let's say that I'm here on, like, my 100th lifetime or so.
Mm-hmm.
You say that you can tap into people that have, you know, passed on. How does that work if they're still existing in this? Is it a different dimension? I'm totally going off script here. I have a long list of questions, but I'm fascinated in, like, a totally different way. How does that work, though? Like, I've always been fascinated by that.
And it gets really confusing, Sean. I mean, this is a huge conversation because time does not exist the way we believe it exists, or the way our mind has been able to hold it and structure it. So, you know, if I start telling you things like, look, you're living right now, but you also are living other existences at the same exact moment, your mind starts to spin out.
Do you think that that's because I can't necessarily wrap my brain around this, but I buy into it. Do you think that's why some of us feel so out of place where we are at certain times? And because I've always felt like a very old soul, highly sensitive person type thing. And a part of me just wonders, is it because I'm not meant to be right here, right now, like in this brain?
I think we're all meant to be right where we are right now. And the reality is this, because this is what I tell people about, you know, they come to me for Akashic record readings or past life readings. It's good to have some information of choices you've made in your other lifetimes that affect how you behave in this lifetime or any kind of karma that you've created, the lessons to be learned. But the important part is you are in this body, you are in this life, and you are in this time-space reality. This is where your moment of power is.
Interesting.
So it's good to have information, but to get lost in it means that you're not really living an empowered life now.
Interesting. I like that. That's a good answer. I like that. Were you ever scared to kind of tap into these powers, or has it always felt really natural to you?
I was afraid more so, I think, about what people would think, because I'd gotten in so much trouble throughout my life for it.
Yeah.
I was never afraid of the things I saw, although I've seen some really, really dark things that I didn't want to admit existed.
Really?
Yeah, because I used to do murder investigations too, and I didn't, there are certain things I didn't want to know that people were capable of, or that went on, and that evil's real and blah, blah, blah. I just didn't want to know. So that part of it scared me, but not anymore.
Yeah. How does that impact the way that you see the world? I think because some of us that don't have those abilities, or do you believe that everyone has those abilities, first of all?
I think everybody has the capability to tap into it.
Yeah. How does it affect, like, seeing what you've seen and what people are capable of? Has that changed the way that you see the world in terms of you seem like a very positive person and outgoing. I feel like that would just make some people very dark and turn inward.
I had dark moments like everybody. You know, I had moments of depression and anxiety and I don't want to be here. That feeling you talk about of I don't belong here. I had that most of my life.
Yeah.
Like someone made a really big mistake and they should take it back. I want to do over. Get me out of here.
Yeah.
But the heart of it is this, like we all of us, no matter what our age, because I've worked with even older people in their 70s, everybody just wants to be loved. And certain things that happen to us in our lives either make us really hard and angry or makes us really soft and open.
Yeah.
But it's always a choice. And some people just aren't conscious of the fact that they have that choice. So when I look at people, even though I do see dark things they think and they do, ultimately strip away the meat suit, the body.
Yeah.
And their spirits too. And at some point, maybe it takes death. They get it and they become aware of the choices they made in this life.
So fascinating. I want to talk about the law of attraction for a second. At the end of the day, mm-hmm. I believe that we attract what we want into our lives based on our thoughts and intentions. And I want to know how that kind of plays into what you believe in practice.
The law of attraction is real. I mean, I know a lot of people that are just now understanding that there is something called the law of attraction. And you're right. Our thoughts, our feelings, our actions, our intentions all affect what shows up in our lives. We're solely responsible, which most people don't want to hear. They're, you know, responsible. But it's one of the laws. My belief and my teachings that I've studied say there are many universal laws and the law of attraction is one of them. So we have to know all of the laws, make them all work together to get the law of attraction to work consistently.
So what are some of the other laws that we can use to kind of incorporate?
Well, the law of honesty is one of the big ones, right? Are you being honest with yourself and are you being honest with others? A lot of people, like, they'll say, well, I want this and I want that, or I am this and I am that. And reality is it's not congruent with their actions. And we have to live within that law. There's a law of judgment. There's a law of detachment. There's a law of personal responsibility. There's a lot of laws. Like, people just don't get it. Law of choices is another one. You know, a lot of people believe they don't have choices. You always have a choice. Always have a choice.
Totally. You say that when we understand how to live within the universal law, it works for us, not against us. Can you elaborate more on what this means to you?
When we understand that these laws are not meant to punish us, they're meant to align us to the infinite field of possibilities where everything exists, right, at any given moment. When we understand that they're there to keep us in line with that, which is a higher vibrational place of love, not fear, not hatred, not sadness, then we can tap into it and ride on the currents of those things. Gives us power. It gives us total power to create what we want without excuse, without fear.
What is the field of infinite possibilities?
It's a quantum field. It's an actual measured field. Like, science has proven it exists, right?
Yeah.
It's got its own frequency, but it's a very high frequency. And within the field of infinite possibilities, that's the place where a lot of us tap in and we get new ideas, new technologies, new inventions. Albert Einstein was one that was fully plugged in.
I want to talk for a minute about quantum physics. It's obviously a very big concept. Can you mm-hmm. break it down kind of simply for someone that may not have an understanding of it and kind of tell us your perspective on how it all works?
To simplify it, I think the easiest way to explain it to people is that everything in the universe has an energetic frequency, okay? Everything does. A thought carries its own frequency. An emotion carries its own frequency. A physical action has its own frequency. And the higher the frequency of, like, divinity,
yeah,
the more potential we have to be able to tap into all that is, or source energy, or some people call it God. You can call it whatever you want. But it's a state of perfection. It's the highest energetic frequency in the entire universe. And when we tap into that, we literally, if we could, people haven't figured it out. Like, Jesus was a master, right? He was able to tap into that and turn water to wine, walk on water.
Sure.
You know, if we could really tap into it and get rid of our third dimensional thinking, our limitations and our fears, we could tap into that and literally create on a moment's notice.
How do you begin to tap into that frequency and then elevate it?
Well, we have to be in a state. This is what like yogis, Buddhist yogis and masters, it's being in a state of total compassion and enlightenment and detachment, right? So it's just, we play with that energy. We're not resisting and fighting up against it. And we're not battling fear and ego. And the more you get to the place where you can drop those social constructs, sure, the more you can tap in. And things like you ask for a fox that appears on the road.
Totally. Totally. I think too, there's some misconception. I think people say, well, I asked for a sports car and it didn't appear in my driveway. And I'm always fascinated by those people because I'm like, well, you have to put some effort into it too. Like, yes, you can manifest things and yes, you can ask for things to appear in your life, but you were probably actively intending to see that fox at some point. You didn't know where or when, but you had a belief behind it, right?
I had a belief that if it was meant, like if what I was doing and planning and intending was the right path, that the fox would appear as my confirmation, right? And in literally middle of nowhere. So either the fox was going to appear or the fox wasn't. And I was pretty detached about it, but I was pretty confident that it would or could, and it did. Now, if the fox hadn't appeared, I'll tell you what, I would have redirected what my actions were. And there is a universal law of action, which is where, you know, people that you talk about say, I thought the sports car would appear in my driveway.
Yeah.
Not if you don't take action.
Totally. And I think that's the piece that's missing, because the law of attraction, that's how it works. You attract things into your life by your actions and by your thoughts. You don't just get to like speak it one time and then have
it. It's not about visualize and decide that you want this thing and then you sit at home and wait for it to drop into the living room. No.
Totally. Now, to get serious for a second, you personally overcame cancer and leukemia, and you say you did that without the use of Western medicine. Now, that could be a pretty controversial statement to some. Tell us about the experience and maybe what you learned in that process.
Well, the leukemia I had to do more than one time, but the only option for treating leukemia is typically chemotherapy, radiation, blood transfusions. It's rough. And the mortality rate is really not good, but I'm super chemically sensitive. So when I found out I had leukemia, I ignored it for a long time until I got to the point where I couldn't anymore. And I wouldn't go with Western treatments. So I started to study natural treatments and natural medicine and nutrition. And to me, it was either you take their medicine and you die, or you take this into your own hands and you become fully responsible for your body, your life, get your head straight, get your emotions straight, and you beat it. And I knew that I would, and it wasn't easy. I mean, it was so funny. I had this one of my friends, which we're not really friends anymore. The last round that I treated got pretty bad because I ignored it too. I'm not really not good at being sick. I like being healthy.
Yeah.
And she said to me, you know, you've had, and it was like 6 months in, and I was almost at the end of it to where my blood counts were all back to normal almost. And she said, how long have you been doing this? I said, 6 months. She goes, most people only have it for like 6 weeks. And I just started laughing. I'm like, you're kidding, right? Like, you do understand, like a lot of those people, they've gone through chemo and they're sicker than they were at the beginning. And most of them don't make it.
Yeah.
It's unfortunate, but they don't.
How much, I'm probably going to get even more controversial with this question, but how much do you think diseases stem from our bodies being disconnected with our minds and not being in a good mental state, that sort of thing? Because you hear a lot about this.
I think it's a huge amount. You know, it's, I believe that the body can overcome toxins if the mind and the emotions are in a higher state, right? Like, and yeah. I know what made me sick. I know what I was going through that led up to me getting sick each time I did. So I know I was responsible for it. Hard one to swallow when you're lying there on the floor and you're sicker than a dog that you created this. But the reality was, I did.
Yeah, and I think that that speaks so much to owning the idea that, you know, we are responsible for everything in our lives, whether it's, you know, an illness, whether it's, you know, a bad relationship, career circumstance, what have you. Like, we are ultimately responsible for that. And if people don't grasp that concept, then they'll just walk around being victims for their lives, right?
So, you know, one of the, I think, because I teach a class in how to deliberately create your life. One of the most common things I hear from people is, I can't be financially successful or abundant because I wasn't born into the right circumstances. Totally. Which, yeah, the thought that we can only be successful or only have this or that based on our circumstances is a total lie. I mean, total lie. And it's a societal belief that needs to be thrown out so that we can have whatever we want, whether that's overcome cancer, you know, recover from a breakup or a heartbreak, or make, you know, $1 million. We can do whatever we want.
You said something really interesting about animals, or your dogs in particular, how they teach you things about life. I believe that too. Can we talk about that for a second? Because I want to know, what is your take on animals? And honestly, dogs in particular, I think that they, I don't know, they're these beings that are sent here, I think, to like show us unconditional love. What is your perspective on all that?
I totally believe it. I mean, totally believe it. I shared with you a little bit about my mother. And back in the 90s, I rescued a Siberian Husky whose name was Shasta. And I had her for about 11 years. And Shasta became like what I consider to be my mother, right?
Yeah.
She's buried in my yard now. And she taught me so much about being a child and having fun and laughter and love. And animals can teach us that. They don't have any resistance to it. They can forgive, they can love, they can bounce back, they can play games, and they're fully in the moment, which as human beings, we aren't.
Yes, that is the one thing that my dog teaches me every day, is to come back to the moment. You're so right about that. I want to talk about when you left the corporate world to follow your passion. What prompted you to take that leap, and what did you learn along the way?
Oh, I had a great career when I left. I had a great marketing career, and I was very young without an education. So the fact that I'd become a marketing director without anything made a lot of people angry in the industry. And I lived in San Diego, and brought a lot of questions up. But for me, it was just, I lived in a magical place. So to me, it was no big deal that I'd become a marketing director. After a couple of years, though, I hated it. I hated the games. I hated the schedule. I hated traveling all the time, doing something that to me seemed very fantasy-like.
Sure.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So my passion was always training horses and showing horses. And I began to go into that direction and thought, you know what? I got enough money. Like, I can create whatever I want, and decided to just jump off. And when I did it, my whole entire life changed. Everything about me changed. And I became free for the first time in my life. And I was in my late 20s, but it was amazing. And since that point of stepping out of the corporate world, my life has never been the same.
Wow, that's inspiring. So you have a pretty awesome online course where you actually teach people how to do this. And they can dive a little bit deeper into these concepts. So tell us about the 30 Days to a Charmed Life course.
So the 30 Days to a Charmed Life course came about from the very things that I went through, all the things I've studied my whole adult life, and the questions I asked. I mean, I had a lot of questions. I'm a Sagittarius, so everything with me is like probe, probe, probe. But in my late 20s, I was going through a whole lot. I was recovering from the molestation of my daughter, who was 3 at the time, and had uprooted my life and had become the marketing director, and I wanted to do other things. And I asked, you know, my guides, teach me how to do this. And I had read way back about the Seth material, but I didn't know if it was really that possible. So I started to ask for things that would work for me, and out came this 22-step process that I have like consistently manifested crazy big things. Yeah. For over 25 years now. And it's the process I teach to my students, but there's work to be done. I mean, this isn't like a simple law of attraction course.
Sure.
I do teach law of attraction. That's lesson one out of 17 lessons. But it's all of the laws and it's a whole process and it's work. I mean, I'm not going to lie and say, oh, this is easy stuff, because you've got to look at yourself and look at your fears and look at what triggers you and look at what patterns you've allowed to continue in your life. Take full responsibility. But by the end of it, you are able to do whatever you want without fear. Stand in that place of total confidence in your ability to be a creator in your own life.
Do you find that a lot of people are willing to do that work? Because I know that for some people, they might show interest in that, but then there comes a point where they're like, it's a bit too much work. Maybe I don't want to get to know myself.
Well, yeah, which is why I give a year in the course, because I have a lot of like come into the course and they start the studies and start the exercises and then they make excuses of why they don't have time to complete it. Totally. And just from teaching it for the last year and a half, I've realized people will start and then they'll go off on their own. Things start to fall apart again and then they come back and do the work. So sometimes it takes people, one or two times of start and stop before they really get to the work. But once they say yes to it, the initial time, that their higher selves like bring them back to it and say, this is good for you. Do the work. And once you get past like the first four or five lessons, it's not that hard. It's just the first four to five lessons are, you're looking at yourself, which is what we need to do as a society.
Totally. Amen. I want to dive in a little bit deeper and discuss blocks. We obviously all have them, but sometimes they're just so deeply rooted that I think a lot of people just remain stuck. And I'm always fascinated by how we can uncover them. Can you give us a sneak peek maybe into how you work with blocks in your course in particular?
Well, here's the thing, like all the questions that we go through in the exercises, right? It starts with conscious fears, conscious beliefs. And then we start to dig a little deeper, unconscious. What do your parents believe? What did your teachers teach you? What did your family, what did they hold to as far as values and you have to this or you have to that? And we start to become investigators in our own lives. Like, what did I grow up around? What did the media teach me? What did I pick up along the way? What did my relationships teach me and to make me who I am today? As you begin to ask those questions, it's amazing how much unconscious stuff gets brought to the surface. And in my course, why I give a year, it's like peeling the layers of an onion, right? Totally. I tell people, take one issue at a time. Don't try and change your whole life at one time, because you'll crash and burn or you'll have a mental breakdown.
But don't you find that we want to change our whole life? Like, that's the whole thing. I love that you teach it layer by layer, but I think some people are just so anxious to fix themselves or to get better or to change that they do end up crashing and burning.
Well, yeah, they want the quick fix, but there is no quick fix. There's no quick fix. You have to do the work. And like as adults, it took you how many years to get to where you are right now? You think it's going to get cleared up in 1 month? No, you have to layer upon layer upon layer.
So I started this podcast because I really wanted to challenge the idea of the status quo. And I want to know how you see the world and those of us that are here evolving in a way that's really challenging that, because I feel like that's happening right now. And how can those of us with this sort of awareness help to kind of spread the message that it's okay to do things a different way and to see things in a different light?
It kind of amazes me when people don't realize that everything that has gone on that isn't working, right? Like they don't recognize that this is not working. It's time to shift it, whether that's nuclear power or our education system or whatever that's out there. There's so many things that are no longer working. And for the last decade or two, it's become more and more obvious. We can't continue to sustain our world in a state of constantly having wars and recessions and one man gets something and another man doesn't. We can't have that. We have to look at things, whatever I do affects the other. And if we can get to that state of total love and compassion and understanding that we are all connected and it is all connected, we're going to create a better environment, a better life, and a better possible future, not just for ourselves, but seven generations going forward. That's what the natives teach. We have to get that. And then we have to go into this really uncomfortable place of, wow, over consumerism doesn't work.
Yeah.
So what do I really need, and what is really important, and what can I give to another versus what can I take?
Do you think we'll get there?
It's going to be a slow burn, you know?
I feel like it's like not happening. In fact, sometimes I feel like we're regressing as a society.
Have you heard the story of the 100th monkey? Do you know that theory?
No.
So one of the things that I learned a really long time ago was this phenomena that happened in Asia. And these monkeys were dying because there was some sort of bacteria in their coconuts. Somehow, there was a group of scientists studying the die-off because they were afraid these monkeys were going to go extinct. And they taught some of the children monkeys how to wash their coconuts before cracking them open so that they could wash off the bacteria. And a strange phenomena ended up happening. When they taught like four little child monkeys how to do it, the children started to teach their mothers, right? And within a week, it went from 4 to 8 to 16. And by a week, not only were all the monkeys just doing it, monkeys on an entirely different island that scientists were also studying had picked it up and started doing it too. That's the 100th monkey. And the theory behind that is that when a certain mass consciousness is hit, a certain percentage of people wake up to the way that we are meant to be living, kind of like osmosis, I guess, but
yeah,
consciousness everywhere picks it up and we take on a whole new paradigm. So we just have to reach the 100th monkey because that's how that worked, is once it hit the 100th monkey, the whole other island picked it up too.
Wow.
And it just became a thing. So they all just started washing their coconuts before they cracked them open, and it saved the entire species.
Wow, that's so crazy. And I'm right there with you. I think that there's definitely a movement toward that. I just feel like there's some of us that are like a part of the movement, and then there's times I meet people that are like nowhere near being a part of that movement, and then I'm just like, ugh, am I losing faith?
Don't lose faith, because really, I mean, look at 30 years ago, very few people knew about the law of attraction. Very few people knew that they could create deliberately their lives versus living by circumstance. But look at the movement that's taken place just in the last decade.
Yep, you're right. Yeah, that's what gives me faith, actually. That's what keeps me going, because I think it has been such a relatively short time since we have kind of achieved this new level of awareness. And I think we're only at the beginning phases. And so I love the idea that it's, you know, it is progressing in a positive direction.
Well, and 20 years ago, we didn't even have the internet.
Absolutely. That's changed everything. You're right.
Mm-hmm.
What are some tools and tricks that you use to stay inspired or motivated in your life?
Yeah. I mean, I spend time, whether it's walking in nature or doing a lot of journaling. And I ask myself really simple questions. What makes you happy? What makes you laugh? What brings you the most joy? And the more I get into that space of really getting clear on what things make me happy, the more inspired I become, and the more inspired action comes to me to take to have more of that in my life.
Yes, could not agree more. Have you ever heard of Danielle Laporte?
I have.
Have you ever done the Desire Map?
I have not, no.
Oh, it's amazing. It's kind of along the lines of what you're describing. It's basically, she takes you through to find your core desired feelings.
Mm-hmm.
And that is what you should, like, those five or six things are what you should aim to try and feel every single day. And that is essentially like how you find your bliss. It's so amazing.
I love that. I love that with animals, and I love that with children. I mean, I think one of my biggest inspirations in life is watching my kids.
Totally.
I have two girls, and now I'm a grandma. So I get to like start all over again, and in a way more conscious way where I'm at right now, watching my little 3-year-old granddaughter explore life.
That's so
it's
cool.
Magical. And then I try to play like at her level.
Yeah.
Like that. And think, well, yeah, why can't we be princesses today? Let's be princesses today.
Totally.
Puts you in a totally different place. And literally that thing that kids, I'm sure you remember it, as kids, we used to play make-believe all the time.
Yeah.
If we can hold that space in our adult lives, we have so much more available to us.
And you know what? I've had this conversation with a lot of people on this show, actually, about this very thing. And it's one of those things where I don't I don't think that most of us know how to channel that, because we do live in this world that we have all these walls up and we're so, you know, guarded and confined. And I think that, to your point, if more of us could figure out how to explore that sort of make-believe world, that we could, we don't even know what we're capable of accomplishing.
Well, and imagination is the same frequency energetically as the intuition. They're one and the same.
Well, and that's where visualization comes in too, right? I think that, like, most people that are able to manifest the things that they want into their lives are able to visualize, i.e. see that, you know, in their future, and that's how it comes into their future.
It does. The more capable you are of imagining what doesn't exist, the more capable you are of creating things that aren't in physical reality or in your physical reality at this moment. So if you can imagine it, then you can create it.
Do you use visualization in any way?
All the time. I'm hyper visual because of the clairvoyance.
Sure.
Everything is, and I'm clairaudient too, meaning I can hear spirit. I can hear things that most people can't hear, but I'm more visual than anything. So it's fun for me to be able to picture things that I would like to have happen. Like Hawaii was awesome. Kauai. Yeah. I could picture it before I ever got there, and I could actually feel it. And when I stepped foot on the island, it was like, oh my God, this is exactly what I've been imagining for the last 6 months.
That's so cool. A lot of people out there who are tackling a new endeavor kind of feel stuck in their progress, or maybe they don't know where to begin. Mm-hmm. And I think a common thing that you hear, especially like with entrepreneurship, is, oh, well, just get started or just take action. But if you don't know what that action is, that advice isn't really helpful. So what is a tangible piece of advice that you would give someone who wants to get started on maybe a new trajectory, but they don't quite know where or how?
First thing is, what's the next logical step, right? Because we have to, you can't just live in fantasy land. There is a certain structure to this reality.
You got to come out of the make-believe world at some point, right?
And at that point, then it's like, okay, so if I want to create a new business, or I want to pursue my passion in art or something like that, what's the next logical step? Do you have the skills? What's it going to take for you to get those skills, and then to apply those skills in such a way that you can become a master at it?
What is a piece of business advice that someone has given you that's probably helped you the most?
I used to hang out when I was 18 with this multimillionaire ex-pro golfer. And the one thing he said to me, which has stuck with me for years, he goes, it's not what you know, it's who you know. So be nice to everybody.
Isn't that the truth? It's so true. I wish more people understood that concept, actually.
It is true. I mean, really, like, it isn't always what you know. You can make big things happen in business and for your career with the more people you know.
Absolutely. What is a challenge you've encountered along the way that you'd like to help someone right now that maybe might be on a similar trajectory not have to experience?
Self-doubt.
Yeah.
I think we all go through it. And I know, because of different challenges or things that happen to us in our lives, we tend to hit different places where it's like, okay, maybe this is crazy. And you begin to doubt yourself, and then you begin to spin into this place of fear and start to pull back, right? You withdraw from your dreams and you no longer engage in pursuing them. And if there's anything I could tell someone, like if I could tell myself this 30 years ago, don't ever doubt in what's in your heart. Don't ever doubt your dreams. Anything is possible. And as quick as self-doubt comes, it leaves. We just have to get back to a place where we remember who we really are.
What is the most challenging experience you've had in your life so far? And what did you create out of that experience?
Yeah, the most challenging one was when my daughter was molested. Cancer, I don't even think, was as hard.
Wow.
Because it wasn't something that I even thought about ever happening. You know, I was really, even I was in my 20s, but to have that happen and to sit there with it, and it created a huge distrust for a number of years with men and with my environment. But what I did learn through all of that is we all have our own lessons, and it wasn't up to me to judge what had happened. And I didn't want to make her a victim. So it was never like, this thing happened to you, oh my God, let's tell that story.
Yeah.
It was all about, it is what it is, and it just happened. how are we going to learn from this and become better?
Totally. That's actually really powerful as a parent of someone that that's happened to, because I think the immediate default reaction is rage and revenge. You know what I'm saying? Like, so to take on that like perspective of things is so powerful, I feel like. Don't you feel like that empowers you more?
I think it did. I mean, it was really interesting too, because I went everywhere I could go for help and no one would help me. But this one man who was like this Baptist pastor took me on and counseled me for free through it. And I was a mess. And I swear I would say things to him just to get a reaction, because I had had bad experiences with religious people. And, you know, I was at sort of a I hate God phase when that first happened. Yeah. And he opened my eyes to this thing that, yeah, bad things happen, but equally good things happen.
You have unlimited money and resources. I'm giving that to you. Okay. How will you change the world?
It's not about resources. It really isn't. It's just about how do you show up?
Oh, that's good. That's the best answer I've received yet, I think. What is your definition of success, and do you think you've achieved it?
Joy. I mean, really, yeah, joy. Because within that framework of joy comes love, comes peace, comes compassion. When you're happy, it doesn't matter what's going on around you. You just want to share it with others.
That's amazing. What we talked a little bit about what we hope the future looks like, but if we can go like 5 years into the future, what do you hope the world looks like?
Connected within the scope of community, right? Where people get that you should take care of your elders. Everyone should care for the children. And it's up to us to take care of this planet and the animals and plants on this planet, because we're all on it together.
What do you hope will be your legacy?
That I've empowered a bunch of people to stand in their own power and taught them that there's nothing to fear. There really isn't.
Bernadette, tell us where we can connect with you on the web.
Just go to my website, BernadetteDickinson.com, or you can find me on Facebook at BVision1.
All right, and we'll make sure to put all that in the show notes. Bernadette, thank you so much for joining me today. Your story is fascinating, and I think that you've provided a lot of great insight to people today. So I want to say thank you so much.
Thank you, Sean. That was fun.
All right, I want to thank Bernadette so much for joining me today. I had a lot of fun with our conversation. And of course, I want to thank you for listening. Now, if you've had any revelations today, I encourage you to join the conversation over on our Facebook page or in our all-new Facebook group. If you're enjoying the show, I'd love if you'd head over to iTunes and click subscribe. And while you're there, if you could take a moment to leave a quick review, I would really appreciate it. You can always find the links for everything we talk about in the show notes, which can be found over at thinkoutsidethelines.com/podcast. Until next time, go out there and pursue your passion today, because the best way to predict the future is to create it. For more information, please visit thinkoutsidethelines.com.